Welcome to Classical Companion. I'm Diane Jones, and over these weeks and months, I'm chatting with artists and musicians throughout the region and throughout the country about the music they turn to in challenging times. Today, I'm very pleased to speak to my friend, Ovidiu Marinescu. Ovidiu is a cellist, a composer, a conductor, an educator. He is a founding member of Trio Casals, and he is based out of the Philadelphia region. Ovidiu, thank you so much for coming and chatting with us today.
Well, what a great pleasure to be here to say hello to your audience. Your radio station has great reputation even down in Pennsylvania for original programming, and that's in large part thanks to you. And it's great to meet formally here. We've collaborated in the past many times musically, but formally now just to share a little conversation in music.
Indeed. And that is quite a list of titles we have for you. Cellist, composer, conductor, educator. You kind of do it all.
It's a little bit intimidating. So I have to live up to great standards. But, you know, as they say, it's all in marketing. So
there you go.
it certainly keeps me busy.
Most definitely. That's a good opportunity to check in. I am checking in with everybody as we start these to see how things are going, because you've had to make some changes to what you had planned in terms of your students. You've had to go online at Westchester University, and you've had to postpone some recording sessions as well. How are things going with you?
Yeah, definitely. Big change. And so I think ability to be adaptable is a great asset. And so I'm trying to rally to the new landscape. And so let's talk about specifics. I have a full-time job at Westchester University in Westchester, Pennsylvania. So teaching private cello lessons and teaching a number of classes. I had actually 5 classes this semester. So everything moved online. Our university made a decision early March to move everything online to the end of the semester. It was ahead of the curve in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
We had 2 extra weeks to prepare our classes and alternate plans. We used Zoom. Lessons went great. Classes went great. The one that was incredibly rewarding was the class for Gen Ed students. I would venture to say that part of my time was spent with, let's say, counseling and taking care of mental health challenges. People responded differently to these times.
Mm-hmm.
And so it made relevant what I do, not only in terms of relevance of music, but relevance of connection and being there for each other. As we all know, the responses, everybody's situation has been different. But, you know, I think we have to look at solutions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think music, and I think in many ways this show, is how do we respond in times of crisis. And perhaps some of the music that we'll hear today reflects that. And I want to just give examples in recent history. I mean, I grew up in communist Romania. Suppression was part of everyday life. Censorship was part of everyday life. People couldn't even move to the cities where they wanted to move. They were assigned to their jobs, and that's where they lived. You couldn't travel abroad in the 80s, and those were challenges. Perhaps we'll hear some music by Shostakovich. I mean, censorship was crazy in the Soviet Union. Even abstract music was censored, and people were sent to be re-educated, didn't have a voice. We can go further in history. I mean, we know the siege of Leningrad, right? It was over a year. People didn't have any food and experienced incredible hardship in terms of cold winters, lack of food. So these times are new to all of us in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
But humanity has gone through challenges before, and I think we can learn from that.
I think so. And, you know, you bring it around to music. What is it that you were searching for as you were putting together your list for us today? What drew you to these pieces just overall?
Mostly, I think, to me personally, it was the power of the music. Music that spoke to me, that I think would speak to other people. And with some of the pieces were stories behind them. Again, stories reflecting hardship. Maybe we'll talk more about this, but so when I put the list together, I looked for more music that's personal to me. Some of it is fun, like tangos. And other music is just beautiful to listen to.
Well, and that's the other thing. You know, we are going through a range of emotions, and I think that is reflected in the music you've chosen. It's a wide range of music. Let's go just straight down the list that you sent to me, okay. Starting with Plainscapes from Petres Vasks. Am I saying that correctly?
I think so. He's a Latvian composer, contemporary composer, and I find his music being very spiritual. How did I come across his music, and particularly this piece? In a time when live concerts are impossible, various arts groups try to stay connected to their audience. Such group is the Crossing Choir in the Philadelphia area, conducted by Donald Nally. And he has a rich history. Actually, years ago, way before I started teaching at Westchester University, he was the choir director. And then he was the choir director of Chicago Symphony. So every day, the Crossing Choir sends a piece as an offering to their fans, supporters, email list, every morning. I don't have a chance to listen every morning, but a few times a week, perhaps I do. And I clicked on this piece, and I had to stop what I was doing. So I think the piece will speak for itself. It's just beautiful. Just beautiful to listen to.
The piece is called Plainscapes by Latvian composer Petres Vasks. This is Donald Nally leading the Crossing Choir. You'll also hear Thomas Mesa on cello and Shannon Lee on violin. A beautiful, beautiful performance there by the Crossing Choir. Now, the next piece you have is certainly much more familiar for folks. It is the Bach with Dino Lipati performing.
Right.
Talk to us about Jesu, Joy of Man's Desiring.
We all have personal favorites.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I grew up with this piece. Dino Lipati was Romanian-born, as I am. And he is a legend in Romania. He died when he was only 33 years old. He was one of the most respected pianists in his time. One of my favorite recordings of his are the Chopin waltzes. And they're my favorite because he shows incredible style, incredible refinement, incredible subtlety. His final recital at Besançon was recorded, and I believe Jesu, Joy of Man's Desiring arrangement was the encore. And so I heard it a number of times growing up in Romania. Perhaps that's why this is like one of my most personal pieces.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I like Bach in general, and we can hear the chorale appearing over beautiful filigree work that Bach composed. And I love it for its simplicity and storytelling. I mean, maybe in some way it's not minimalist, but the repeated it's like spinning a tale.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets you like a magical ritual. And then when we hear the chorale, like, life is beautiful. Or let's say divine inspiration is beautiful.
Let's listen to a little of that divine inspiration. Jesu, Joy of Man's Desiring, music of Bach, performed here by Dino Lipati. ¶¶ repeated line. You're right. It just circles around and circles around and draws you in, I think, deeper and deeper and deeper. I don't think there's ever a note out of place with Bach.
I mean, when we think how much he composed, I think he had divine inspiration. He couldn't have had the time to go back and edit much.
No.
I think music flowed out of his pen. I mean, just think in Leipzig, where he spent his last few decades of his life being a cantor at St. Thomas Church. He had to write a cantata pretty much every week. But how much more he composed. And let's think about his time in Köthen, which was his only secular position, or his main secular position in the 1720s. And he composed the Brandenburg Concertos, the orchestral suite. He composed the suites for solo cello, the three sonatas and three partitas for solo violin. It's just incredible. So the complexity of the music, the purity, the perfection is, you have to be either like an incredible genius or divinely inspired or maybe both.
This next piece, and you touched on this a little bit, this is the Messiaen from the quartet,
yes,
for the End of Time, Louange à l'éternité de Jésus. It's for violin and piano. What is it about this particular movement that brought you to it?
This piece has 9 movements, and I struggled with, not struggle, but I wonder what movement should I recommend? I don't know. I think Messiaen has the ability to slow time down, which is incredible for a composer, you know. Manipulating time, maybe that's everybody's dream. Can we slow life down? And sometimes it's like, oh my God, such a hard week. I can't wait for this week to be over. And then I reflect, it's like, what, am I wishing my life away? So we all want to speed up time or we want to slow it down. But the beauty of it is that sometimes art does that. But always is the history behind it. Messiaen became prisoner of war and then made friends with the other musicians there, French musicians who play the clarinet, the cello, and the violin, and he played the piano. And initially he wrote a short trio for the three of them. It's just one of the movements, clarinet, violin, and cello. And then the piece eventually developed into this 50-minute, let's say, epic work that includes the piano. Just the history of it. It premiered outside in the rain, January 1941, labor camp in Germany. It was not a concentration camp. It was because these were prisoners of war. So I think maybe in many ways they were lucky. I mean, imagine that it's just the dream of the world. They didn't have radios. Now we have radios. We can listen to music. We can play a CD. We can use our smartphones. We can read a book. I mean, it's hard when life is hard. But how was their life in the prison camp? They didn't have warm clothes. They didn't have heat inside. Did they have lice?
Mm-hmm.
What did they eat? You know, the musicians had just poor instruments.
Mm-hmm.
The cello was bought with donations from camp members. I mean, and a German guard who was probably a music lover provided papers to help Messiaen compose and help acquire the instruments and forged the papers, the guard, with a stamp made from a potato. It's again, you know, sometimes enemies were brought together by music and kindness and connection. And this movement is, if I were to describe it, the hypnotic piano chords, repeated rhythm, which sort of like slows one's heartbeat, perhaps, one's breathing rate, and then the violin plays long notes, soaring higher and higher and higher and higher and higher and higher. You know, maybe like touching the clouds.
It's music to lift us in even the most desperate of times.
I think so.
I have a performance here with Leila Josefowitz on violin and John Novacek on piano. Louange à l'éternité de Jésus from the Quartet for the End of Time. ¶¶ I think the Quartet for the End of Time speaks not only to the power of the music itself, but to the need to have music at all times. That music is something I think we all have to have in our lives in order to just process and move forward sometimes.
Oh, I personally strongly believe that art is a fundamental component of human existence, human society, human mind. Why do we need it? Because through art in general, and music in particular, we express that cannot be expressed in words, right? And when we all build these fears and anguish and desires and anger sometimes, all these feelings, how do we deal with that? You know, if we bottle them up, then they come out they explode. And so music in this case, okay, we are listeners, but in some way we connect to the deep expression of the composer. True composers bring something out of their soul. They work through their feelings, through their subconscious. Mm-hmm. And they bring it unfiltered through music. And we as listeners, we relate to that. And it acts a little bit like a healing mechanism for us too. That's why we need it. Yeah, sure, it's nice to have it in the background, but when we hear a piece of music that really touches us, don't we all stop what we do? Because it becomes so essential.
Now, this next piece is on the other end of the spectrum, from Miguel de la Aguila. Yeah. What do we have here?
We have a tango trio. I became acquainted with Miguel's music through a piece for cello and orchestra called Concierto and Tango. It's basically a tango concerto. I was fortunate eventually to perform it this past December with Newark Symphony in Delaware. You know, Miguel brings fun into his music. You know, his voice is a modern voice, but is full. It's a language that we all understand. You know, Piazzolla, the Argentinian composer and bandoneon player, he brought the tango from the dance halls to the stage. We all love hearing Piazzolla music, and maybe Miguel is one of those composers who took it a step even further. So he has the flair of South America, has the energy, has the crying, has the flirting, has the rhythms, has the passion. His music in general is filled with this energy. He's Uruguayan-born, lives on the West Coast, and is incredibly prolific. And we have a tango trio that has several lives. In this case, is the version for violin, clarinet, and piano.
Here are members of the Transatlantic Ensemble with the tango trio from Miguel de la Aguila. Love a tango. I love those rhythms. I think they pull you and carry you, and it's a marvelous performance there as well from the Transatlantic Ensemble.
Yeah, I agree.
Now, This next work is from another composer that you are acquainted with personally, Michael Couric.
Yes.
And you were part of The Sea Knows, which, how many weeks was that number one on the classical Billboard chart? 8, 9 weeks, something like that?
Oh, I don't think it was quite 8, 9 weeks, but it was fantastic to have a recording in which one is involved be at number one. So it was there for several weeks. And Michael Couric is a friend of mine, friend because he's an incredible human being, but also friend because we've collaborated now on a number of projects. He writes great music. And he studied at the University of Michigan. And like many contemporary composers, went through a personal journey. We know that sometimes the academia tries to experiment and goes where other people haven't gone, and innovation at all means. And Dr. Couric went through that process, but eventually he realized that music wasn't personal. It was a technique. So he completely gave it up and went to a, let's say, neo-romantic style of composing. That's what is music today. I first played his piano trio and collaborated with the Nashville Ballet. And it's basically a love story in music. And then Mr. Couric composed the piece for cello and orchestra, The Sea Knows, and then a serenade for cello and harp that I premiered. But in this case, okay, so let me tell you a little bit about this piece. As soon as I heard it, I said, wow, what? This is basically like Disney music. It's a fantasy in sound. And I'm not sure exactly how it happened, but I think he was commissioned to write a piece for celesta and orchestra. Celesta is a keyboard instrument that has very crystal-like. We know it from Dance of the Sugar Plums in The Nutcracker. I can't quite imitate the sound of a celesta, but at least I could suggest the tune. And I think it's, if not only, certainly the first piece, concerto for celesta and orchestra. And it's not very long, maybe about 5 minutes. And I was fortunate to conduct it a number of years ago with the Westchester University Orchestra. I think the sounds, they make me smile. I see little flying beings, maybe like a Peter Pan, little magical tricks, children playing, being touched by fairies. It's just fun music.
Let's take a listen to Michael Couric's Fairy Dreams. I love that you got to conduct that. I mean, I think that's one of the things that's nice. You get to get your hands into music in a variety of ways, not just as a cellist, but also as a conductor and as a composer. That probably gives you a different connection depending on how you're approaching it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, people ask me, which one do you like better? I don't know. I like conducting. I play, I like playing. Which concerto do I like better? Well, the one that I play at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think to me the best part of conducting, to be honest, is working with people, inspiring people to be at their best, to excel, to even excel their dreams. And it's fantastic. And then the opportunity to shape and mold incredible music, right? I mean, as a cellist, we are lucky to have good repertoire, but as a conductor, you know, some of my favorite experiences were conducting Beethoven's Ninth with 120 singer choir and full orchestra, or Brahms Requiem, or Mahler Symphony Number 5, or Shostakovich Symphony Number 10, or Romeo and Juliet by Prokofiev, or from all time, Brahms, and it's incredibly rewarding, but it's certainly challenging.
Most definitely. Well, our next work is a cello sonata from Giuseppe Clemente dal Bacco, and you're not performing here. I suspect part of the appeal of this is the performer on this. Am I right?
Yeah, well, I didn't want to recommend any piece in which I'm a performer. It's easy to self-market, but I didn't want to do that. So when I was thinking about what music do I listen to, or what music would I suggest, I wanted to recommend different styles. And Eleanor Frey is a Canadian cellist who plays a lot of Baroque cello, which is, it's the same instrument, but it's set up differently and is played in a different style. It uses gut strings, among other things, so it's a different tone, the tuning is lower. And I actually met Eleanor Frey very, very briefly after a concert of Trio Casals at Casanova Music Festival for Syracuse New Music Society.
Yeah, the Society for New Music. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and she happened to be at a concert to introduce herself, and I didn't know her name, but I made sure to check her music. She's just a fabulous performer. As a matter of fact, she's doing online concerts, and she has quite a following. I was lucky to hear one of her performances, virtual performances, maybe about a month ago during the time of COVID. And I thought, hey, this would be great to include. And I sent her a message on Facebook. I said, I would really love to have something what would you recommend? And she recommended a new album that was just released, and particularly one sonata by Del Abaco, Italian or originally composer, but he grew up in Germany, where his father was Kapellmeister to the Bavarian court, and then he traveled all around. But Del Abaco lived in the 18th century, by and large, 1709 to 1805.
This is the sonata in D minor of Giuseppe Clemente dal Bacco, and it features Eleanor Frey on Baroque cello and Federica Bianchi on harpsichord. I've met Eleanor. She is a marvelous, marvelous performer, as we just heard in that piece from dal Bacco. And I'm so glad that you wanted to share her music with us. Thank you for that.
Oh, it's great music, right? And played with a lot of freshness.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, you even mentioned that you had an opportunity to conduct this. We have some Mahler next. What drew you to this?
I think when I started putting this list together, I noticed that there were a lot of slow pieces, brooding, meditative, peaceful, inspiring. And then I said, I got to add some energy and kick, enhance the tango, and enhance a little bit of the sonata, and maybe if we get to some Shostakovich. But Mahler is this movement from his Symphony Number 5, which has five movements. It's a big symphony, over an hour long.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a life story. right? It's through the five movements, goes through all emotions and the true story. And the Adagietto is just pure, beautiful. It's for strings and harp. I remember, I think I was a kid or a young man, seeing a movie, Death in Venice. And I believe it's based on Thomas Mann's novel. But it had hints of Mahler. It's an interesting movie. It's not action movie. It's an artistic film. And the music, the background to this film was the Adagio. I didn't know what the music was at the time, but it was playing over and over and over and over. And it had certain bittersweet quality to it that inspired me at that time, and maybe it stayed with me. But I think, music is such a personal thing. Everybody has a different experience. I feel guilty for even just by sharing my thoughts in some way, suggesting a range of emotions. Sometimes it's great for people to discover a piece of music for themselves.
Exactly, and that's why these are going so well, because people are hearing stories and able to put a different context on something that they may not have thought of before. So it really helps to touch. Let's take a listen to the Adagietto from the Symphony No. 5 of Gustav Mahler. Now, you have another symphony for us, or at least a selection from a symphony, and you've been dying to get to the Shostakovich, and we are there.
Well, this is perhaps we are going to play the second movement of his Symphony No. 10. And I think to me, besides the music, the story is powerful. Shostakovich, Soviet composer, his life is really parallel to the communist system in the Soviet Union, repressive. He was censored in 1934, blacklisted, after Stalin attended a performance of his opera Lady Macbeth of Mtsensk, if I say it correctly. And an article appeared in the newspaper Pravda the next day accusing Shostakovich of formalism and being a traitor and not writing for the people, and again, being blacklisted. In 1948, there was a Congress of the Composers Union. It took place in Moscow at the Great Hall of the Moscow Conservatory. I was fortunate to perform there, a hall with great tradition. And at this meeting, it had been decided that five composers were going to be given as an example of degenerate music. And the list was discussed for about a day or two. Some names made it in or out, depending on friends. It was a negotiated list. Those who made it on the list were Shostakovich, Prokofiev, Khachaturian, Myaskovsky, and Shebalin. Myaskovsky, I believe, had been, or at least was at that point, president of the Composers Union, Khachaturian also. These were like the biggest names in Soviet music. And they were asked to stand up, to come to take over the microphone and admit their mistakes and guilt. Not only that, but they were blacklisted. And anybody who was seen with them was considered a collaborator. As they walked down the street, for example, Shostakovich would walk down the street, his best friend would go across the street because he could not be seen. He'd go to a concert, nobody would sit around him. It was the social distancing, but for different reasons. Mm. I mean, two seats to the left, two seats to the right were empty. With one exception, one of his students, Elmira Nazirova, who one day sat next to him. Stalin died in 1953, I believe, right? Same day with Prokofiev. And Shostakovich finally, it was his first symphonic work, the Symphony No. 10. So 5 years after being blacklisted in 1948, Stalin dies. There is hope of maybe more openness, and he writes this symphony. And in many ways, perhaps a bit autobiographical, in the book Testimony, there is a claim that the second movement represents Stalin himself, although this statement is controversial because it's not Shostakovich's statement, it's the author's statement. But getting back to the symphony, four movements, the first one is really long, develops like the Russian plains, like the Russian winters, long. The second movement is concentrated in 3 or 4 minutes. And it's incredible virtuosity, it's a lot of fun, it's fanfares. Perhaps it represents Stalin. The third movement is incredible because it represents the love story between Shostakovich, possibly platonic love story, between him and Elmira, his student, that sat next to him. And he felt that he owed her a thank you. And Elmira is represented by the French horn with a motif that comes back, I think, 10 times or so, at the same time with his signature, D-S-C-H. So you hear this call and response, his name, her name, his name, and his name. And very powerful movement as well. And finally, a victorious finale that concludes the symphony. So are we going to play the scherzo, the second movement?
We are. We are going to play the scherzo from the Symphony No. 10 of Shostakovich. Let's take a listen.
Okay, you better hold on.
So rousing, so exciting, the scherzo from the Symphony No. 10 of Shostakovich. And such an incredible life that he led as well, leading to that. And I think that comes through in many compositions, is the culmination of everyone's life experiences.
Yeah, and I mean, why compose? Why write if it's not to express something that needs to be expressed?
We're coming to the final work on your list, and I had no idea what to expect when I saw this. Talk about this one. I'm not even going to try and pronounce it. I'm going to let you pronounce the name here.
Okay.
Did I put you on the spot?
Like, no, you didn't, but I'm thinking is like, do we want to give away the fun of this? In any case,
we can take a listen and then talk about it after.
Let's do that. Take a listen. Let's see what our audience thinks, and then we'll talk about it. Taraf de Haiduk.
That was such a fun piece, such an incredibly fun piece. Why is it on your list?
It's because this group is Romanian, and I'm Romanian born, but they're actually gypsies. And they're real gypsies. They live in a village, and they made music. They learned generation from generation to generation. It's all learned by ear. They don't read music, most likely, maybe some of them. How do I know? Well, I played in a gypsy band when I was in the conservatory. I got recruited to play in the students' folk band, and they were all gypsies, and they needed some people who studied. So my buddy and I, we got recruited there. They were all playing by ear. These musicians are born with it and cultivate from an early age. They know hundreds of tunes. And they wrote some music for us. The director of the group wrote some sheet music, but the gypsies didn't follow that. They were just like, okay, now let's play it again. Now doing the key of G, doing the blah, blah, blah. So I was playing the cello. It's like, no, this doesn't make any sense. So I had to follow them. And then I thought, there's no cello in a gypsy band. You guys are crazy. This doesn't fit. Give me a bass. So they found a bass there. They had a bass player already. They had a hammer dulcimer, timbal, it's called, and a violin, bass, accordion, and hammer dulcimer, timbal. So they gave me a bass. I hadn't played the bass at all. And I learned by imitating what this young man was doing, but he had only three strings. Played those three strings. And when I learned the bass, I just did what he did. So I played only the top three strings. That's what he had. And it was a blast. I mean, I had an incredible time breaking out of the routine of practice your passage 25 times a day until you get it perfect, and it's only like that. So getting back to this group, Taraf means band, and Haiduc is outlaws. In Romanian, it would be Haiduc. So they're just having fun. They have supernatural talent. Just to tell you how their life is, I had a few friends who led this life, and their main means of earning a living for most of them is playing at weddings. Now, a traditional wedding in Romania is not from 6 to 8 p.m. On a Saturday. No, it's 3 days.
Oh, my.
I had a cousin get married in a village in Oltenia, southern Romania, where my father came from. And we showed up there, I think, Thursday night. And the festivities started, I think, already Thursday night. Friday morning, there were various processions through the village. And all throughout, there was a gypsy band that came along, and they played. And then we had an official lunch, and they played. And you take a break, and they had a dinner, and they played. And then Saturday morning, you go to the well, and you do this ritual, and the band plays. And then you go to church, and the band, they don't play in church, but they play before you get there. And you walk out of the church, the band plays. And you go to the party, and the party starts maybe at 6 p.m. And it lasts until 4, 5, 6 a.m. And these people play 8 hours. They take breaks, and they play. And they sleep for 2 hours, and then Sunday morning they get up, and people continue to party. And that's the life of a gypsy musician. They know hundreds, thousands of tunes, if sing by ear, if not they improvise. And then they just rest Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, half of Thursday.
Wow. When I saw that, I said, I know why he picked that. That is home for you. It's that taste of home.
A little bit. And it's a taste of fun.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's been a fantastic journey that you've taken us on, Ovidiu. I really, really appreciate it. And before I let you go, I'd love to give you an opportunity to just leave us with any last thoughts you may have, either about the importance of music during these times or anything generally you'd like to leave with us.
One more can I add? I think the music speaks for itself, but I think that it's difficult now, but we have to stay connected. We have to find ways to stay positive. I don't know how many people have had an easy time. For me, what helped me, I've had a number of projects, but having projects to work for has carried me through. But, you know, I struggle too, because life goes on. What I found helpful, actually, in recent ways is to read quotes by Rumi, Persian poet and religious figure. And I'm going to open my iPhone, and I'm going to read one or two because they're just incredible. Even last night, I was reading through them. Here is one. The moment you accept what troubles you've been given, the door will open. Here is another one. Love is the bridge between you and everything. And only from the heart can you touch the sky.
I love that.
These pains you feel are messengers. Listen to them. And there was one that I will paraphrase because I found it to be very powerful and I cannot find it now. But it said, is losses that we experience now are going to be replaced by new beauty. Isn't that true? I mean, if we could just only be that wise.
Mm-hmm.
It's so hard, though. Diane, can you be wise in these hard times?
I can try. And looking for the beauty on the other side. And for me, part of that beauty is finding it in the music, finding it in the shared experience of the music. Even though we're not physically together, we get to share the music together. And I think that's powerful, and I think that's important.
And I think we have to make it personal.
I agree.
I think that's how we connect, sharing.
Well, I do thank you for sharing. Once again, I've been speaking to Ovidiu Marinescu, a cellist, composer, conductor, educator. He's the one of the founders of Trio Casals, and he has shared this amazing array of music and stories with us today. Ovidiu, thank you once again for taking some time out and talking to us.
Thank you.